Good morning, everyone. I'm John Myrie, and welcome to the Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. On this week's show, we have reports and tips for you from Jarrett McCarthy down at Hayward Bait and Bottle. And then we have a very interesting talk with Chippewa Flowage guide, resort owner, and historian John Detloff about the Chippewa Flowage and the fact that it's 100 years since it was created. We've got lots to cover on this week's show, all coming up right after these messages.
The Hayward area is a true snowmobile mecca with over 600 miles of groomed trails. In the middle of it all, you'll find us at Hayward Power Sports. We're open from 9 until 5:30, Monday through Saturday, with sales, service, parts, and rentals. Plus on Sundays, we're open for rental pickup and drop-off only from 9 to noon. Hayward Power Sports has 14 people staffing our parts and service departments Monday through Saturday. With state-of-the-art computer diagnostics and the most highly trained techs, nobody can get you back on the trail faster. Plus, with over $1 million parts inventory, we're likely to have your parts in stock. Hayward Power Sports is your Polaris and Ski-Doo dealer with the region's best selection of new and used sleds. Plus, our showroom is packed full of garments and accessories. Check out Polaris, Ski-Doo, Castle, 509, and Climb. Find Polaris, Ski-Doo, and Castle helmets and necessities like wear rods, belts, Hyphax, and oil. Want to get back on the trail fast? Come see Hayward Power Sports. Just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77 or online at haywardpowersports.com.
Riding along in my automobile.
Bumping into things unexpectedly? Make your first choice for collision repair. Ernie's Auto Body, featuring the most advanced collision repair facility in northwest Wisconsin. With a state-of-the-art spray bake-down draft paint booth for that better-than-new finish, laser technology for precision frame alignment, loaner cars available, computerized estimates, written guarantees, and documented unmatched customer service, the clear choice is Ernie's Auto Body, south of Hayward on Highway 63 and Nursery Road, where quality is no accident.
Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering welcomes you to stop by for their great lunch menu, and while you're there, Lynn's also has a great selection of custom-cut meats and sausages, as well as many varieties of snack sticks, jerky, fresh cheese curds, and much more. Lynn's is open Mondays through Fridays from 9 to 5:30 and 9 to 4 on Saturdays. Lynn's Custom Meats and Catering in Hayward. We're recording this week's show down at Hayward Bait and Bottle. I got Jarrett McCarthy in here. And Jarrett, again, not good reports out there as far as the ice condition. There's plenty of ice to walk out on, but you got a lot of water to deal with and slush.
It's definitely a pain walking out there. Walking or driving out there on, you know, be it on side-by-side or snowmobile, there's a lot of water, a lot of slush. And, you know, at the moment that we're doing this, I see it snowing again out there. So, you know, it's rough conditions out there getting out.
Not just here. It's all across the north, too, from what I'm hearing. The farther west you go, I think they had a little bit better ice and farther north, but over in Minnesota and stuff. But around here, I mean, somebody was out on Nelson Lake the weekend. They said they had more slush than they had ice.
I believe that, yep. Seems like we got that opinion going around, so.
Yeah, just don't get stuck out there. I mean, four-wheelers and wheeled vehicles are going to get stuck real quick, it seems like. Yeah, snowmobiles, and they'll go on tracked machines. But there again, if you stop and you're in the middle of that slush, you're in trouble again there, too.
Yep, as soon as that weight sits down in one area, you're going to punch through that top layer of snow and slush real fast. You might be walking across, and you might think you've had a good layer, but underneath, you know, that top frozen crusted layer, there's water.
But there have been people out ice fishing, and I'm getting decent reports back. What are you hearing?
Yeah, we're getting some decent reports coming back. Sounds like walleye fishing's kind of slow right now, but people are doing really well on panfish.
Yeah, walleye fishing generally does slow up this time of the year, and then you get a little burst just before it closes the end of the season.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, guys that are out there right now, we're seeing some really nice fish being caught, but, you know, guys are working for them. They're out there during the peak periods for these fish, you know, right before dark, really finessing them during the daytime if they are getting them, but there's fish out there to be caught.
You bet. Well, you know, and that magic golden hour just before dark and slightly after is always a good for just about everything, even the crappies.
Absolutely. Golden hour for golden critters. Yeah. And, you know, the crappies, too. You know, walleyes aren't the only fish that have a bite window right at dark. You know, a lot of panfish will go right at dark, too. Just the changing of day to nighttime will turn a lot of fish on. So, you know, it pays to be out there during that prime time hour.
You know, one thing I've noticed, too, it seems like, and it's not the case every place, but if you got stained water, the more stained the water, the more likely you're going to have a crappies biting during the daytime. And the more clear the water is, the more they tend to go right at dark or even after dark.
Yep. Yep. I've definitely seen that myself. Yeah. So that means that there are a lot of different places where you can get out and catch fish at different times of the day around here. Yep.
Anything on bluegills you're hearing?
I'm hearing very little on bluegills. Seems like the guys that are out getting bluegills or what have you are getting them close to structure, fishing weed lines and cribs.
Yeah. You know, and they tend to go toward dark. One thing you notice at dark on a lot of lakes, you start seeing that zooplankton and stuff coming. If you watch your depth finder, all of a sudden you start getting a lot of clutter coming on the bottom and it starts coming up, up, up. That's, you know, sometimes it's bloodworms and stuff like that down there, insect, but a lot of times it's just zooplankton coming up, and that's when everything starts to get active, and I think that's the reason.
Yep, the food chain is coming alive at night. You know, all the zooplankton will be active or what have you, and that'll bring in all the little insects or what have you that'll feed on those and in turn all the panfish.
Anyway, I don't know what the cold coming in. We've got some cold in the forecast that's going to make a little bit better, I'm sure of that. And there's places to get out ice fishing. The trick is, like we talked about on other shows, find the places where you can get to where you want to get without having to travel a big distance. You can walk out there pretty easy.
Yep. Easy is the nature of fishing for the rest of the season. You know, just talking to a couple of anglers today, it sounds like they are trudging through a lot of snow. So, you know, getting to an area where you can get to and set up easily so you're not huffing and puffing by the time you get out to your spot is the key. Yeah.
Yeah, a snowmobile trail is a good way, too. Just be aware of snowmobile traffic and stuff. But usually the trails get packed down, that slush freezes, and you got a little high ground out there. But as soon as you step off that trail, that's where you run into that slush.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, for those of you who are taking the snowmobile trails out, make sure if you're going to start drilling, get far enough off the trail just so you're not, you know, causing any accidents or anything with the snowmobilers. No matter how easy it is to walk on that trail, you know, other people are using it. But yeah, definitely look for easier ways to get out.
Yeah, you can get out there. Just don't drill holes in the middle of the trail if you can help it. The other thing, pike. How about pike out there?
Been hearing some on pike. We're seeing some really nice pike being caught on tip-ups as usual. But, you know, pike are a different kind of critter because we've got lakes around here where you'd be catching pike in 5 to 10 feet of water, which makes them, you know, fairly accessible with all this snow and slush. And then we've got anglers that are trying to get out to a little bit deeper water that are still having some success. So pike are a really good fish to target here where you can get to them easily.
Good eating fish, too. And then lastly here, let's talk a little bit perch. That's always picks up this time of year, it seems like.
Haven't heard anything back on perch yet. Haven't seen any pictures coming out. I know the time is coming. You know, we're getting closer to, you know, end of January, early February, where those perch really start picking up. They'll move up onto those big mud flaps, you know, getting ready to do their thing when ice out comes or what have you, but haven't heard anything yet.
And surprisingly, with the ice conditions we have on the inland lakes, I am getting some reports back that they're getting some ice fishing in up on the Shawmigan Bay, and they're catching fish up there.
Yep. I've been seeing and hearing that too. Some nice fishing coming up there. Definitely got to watch where you're going out. Access points, I've heard some really bad ice conditions on several of the places where they get out. But, yeah, there's definitely some fish being caught up there right now.
It's always a place you got to be extremely careful in. Let's talk a little bit about Tet Shop. You've got a couple sales going on. I see some signs here on shacks and augers and stuff, and you still got plenty of ice fishing gear.
Absolutely. You know, we're only mid-January right now, so there's, you know, half a season to go, even with the snow and ice that we have. But, yeah, we're running a sale down here. We got 10% off augers and shacks. We got 5% off ice electronics. So if you're looking for a new unit or a new way to keep you warm, especially with the cold temps that we got coming up, we're here for you. Stop on by.
You know, all this snow we got, I think we're going to take care of the low water situation we had come spring when it starts to melt, and we're going to be getting ready for spring stuff.
I'd say, yeah, I think a lot of people are chomping at the bit for spring. You know, a lot of people are hanging back this ice season and, you know, probably hung it up early, you know, just like myself, and are waiting for some nice warm spring days, get out, get after some panfish.
You heard anything new in electronics or any of that stuff coming out? Because usually this is the time of year they start releasing that stuff.
Electronics, not so much, but there are a lot of really interesting baits that are going to be coming out for this next year. I'm really looking forward to some of the new Z-Man micro finesse plastics that they've got coming out for panfish. Some really, really cool looking baits, but you know, a lot of new things to look forward to for this coming spring.
You know, I used to be crazy over muskies, but I like going after panfish now because they catch a lot more fish.
Absolutely. Yeah, they are fun. They taste good, too.
You bet. Well, Jarrett, I appreciate you taking the time here, and let's hope we get a little better ice conditions because we still got a long ways to go unless we get a really early ice out, which that can happen.
Can happen, and I'm sure a lot of people have their fingers crossed on that, but until then, we'll make do with what we have.
You bet. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks, John.
Well, folks, you know, we need to take a break right now and hear from some of the fine sponsors that bring this show to you every week. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Chippewa Flowage with fishing guide and resort owner John Detloff. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages. Hunters and Anglers, Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop in Hayward. They have a huge selection of ice fishing gear, including portable shelters, power augers, electronics, beaver dam tip-ups, ice rods, and just about anything you'll need for ice fishing. They also have archery supplies, bows, crossbows, muzzle loaders, ammo, and much more to help you enjoy the outdoors. While you're there, check out the bottle shop for a full selection of beer, wine, and liquor, too. Hayward Bait and Bottle is your one-stop sport and bottle shop.
The Hayward Lakes Visitors and Convention Bureau in Sawyer County, Wisconsin welcomes you to our Northwoods hometown. No matter the season, no matter the activity, you'll always be surrounded by our great outdoors. What more could you ask for in a vacation destination? Woods, waters, world-class events. Contact us for information on lodging, dining, attractions, events, trail conditions, and more. Order your free vacation guide and start planning your getaway today. Visit us at haywardlakes.com or call 1-800-724-2992.
Rent some winter fun from Hayward Power Sports. We're Wisconsin's largest and most complete snowmobile rental service, offering a wide range of late model sleds from Polaris and Skidoo. All of our machines are frequently serviced by our certified technicians, and your rental includes a helmet. Plus, you'll be able to ride out the gate with access to 600 miles of groomed trails. To rent your winter fun, go to haywardpowersports.com, give us a call, or visit Hayward Power Sports, just 10 minutes east of Hayward on Highway 77.
At Hayward Power Sports, let's have some fun!
Welcome back to another segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors, and this part of the show is brought to you by the Hayward Lakes Visitor and Convention Bureau. For more information on vacationing and lodging here in the Hayward Lakes area, check out their website at haywardlakes.com. Well, folks, you know, one of the things that's happening this year is this is the 100th year anniversary of the creation of the Chippewa Flowage, which is, I believe, the third largest inland lake in the state of Wisconsin, a very popular and a very unique lake. I had a chance the other day to talk to fishing guide, historian, and resort owner John Detloff about the history of the Chippewa Flowage and a lot more. We're going to run the first part of it this week on the show, and next week we're going to finish up with that talk we had with John. But it's a very interesting thing with lots of information. John, you know, this is a very unique situation this year. We've got the 100-year anniversary of the creation of the Chippewa Flowage.
That's right. It's a very historic time. The Winter Dam was built in 1922 and 23, and the gates of the dam were closed in that spring in March, and the flowage began flooding almost exactly 100 years ago, and now we're blessed with this beautiful body of water called the Chippewa Flowage, although there was a cost to that, and that's, you know, it displaced all of the people that were living within the basin of the floodplain, and that was, of course, quite controversial, and it's just a case where, well, I guess you might say progress kind of leave people, in the dust, so to speak, as time marches on. In this case, it was the making of the Chippewa Flowage. It was created to control the uniform flow on the Chippewa River, which goes all the way through Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, enters the Mississippi and Pepin. And that was planned for a number of years. They started seriously talking about creating the flowage back in 1906, and they sent some surveyors up here in 1911, 1912, and they drew up a map, a survey map of how they projected that the flowage would flood, and it was quite accurate. And then after that, it was a process of trying to buy up the lands of the people that were flooded. There was two major Indian villages and settlements within the flood area, the most famous of which was the village of Pequawong. That's on the southeast end of the flowage, actually right where I live. I've been living there for 50 years exactly, so it's really a point of fascination with me. And the other village was on the south end of Chief Lake. There was an Indian settlement there. And in addition to them, there was a number of homesteaders, non-Indians, that were flooded out and lost their houses, farms, stopping places. So it was really quite a big deal back in the 20s. And here we are today, 100 years later.
Well, you know, the flowage, a lot of people may live up here and maybe not quite realize it so much as until you really start looking into it. But it's a very unique body of water. I mean, it's the third largest inland water in the state of Wisconsin. And you compare it to, it's not a big lake. And by any means, it's not a big lake. Compare it to, say, Leech Lake in Minnesota, which is 8 times bigger than the Chippewa flowage. But the Chippewa flowage actually has more miles of shoreline than Leech Lake does, we being 8 times bigger. And it, because it was dammed up all them individual lakes, I don't remember, I believe 10 or 11 original lakes,
yes.
You can go from clear water to dark water in all kinds of conditions in between. It's just so different on that lake.
Yes, it's a real unique blend. It's a lake, but it's also a series of rivers. It's a reservoir. It's kind of a mixture of all of that combined. And like you mentioned, one part of the flowage, the west side, is very clear water. You get on the east side where most of the major rivers come in. That brings the tannin into the flowage. That water is dark and stained. It's got a lot of shallow water habitat and structure, which makes it a tremendous fishery and a tremendous wildlife refuge as well. There's a lot of habitat for waterfowl and ducks and geese, you know, other wildlife, otters, and it just abounds with life. And it's still largely a wilderness. It's, I think, 92% or 93% undeveloped. And
it will stay that way, too.
It will, because most of the land is owned either by the state or the tribe, and both those entities don't want to develop it.
Yeah, and the power company owns a bunch, and the feds even own some on their federal national forest on one side.
Yes. So the Northern States Power owned a lot of land all the way up until the late 80s, and I know they sold a big block of land to the state. I think it was 7,000 acres for $7 million, and that was a big deal. So now the state is caretaking that land, and you know, hopefully it'll remain wild and just stay this way forever.
Wasn't there some kind of an agreement that was drawn up and agreed to maintain it as a wilderness lake?
Yes, I know in 1971, at the 50th anniversary of the flowage, the tribe stepped forward because a lot of promises were made that weren't granted when they first got flooded out in 1923, and they took a stand at the Winter Dam, and they wanted their grievances heard, and they had a lot of legitimate grievances. So the governor got involved, and that led to an organization of the tribe and the power company and the different state agencies, and that went on for many years. But there was a settlement arrived at, I think, in the mid 80s. And the tribe gained a lot of additional land because of that. And I think that's about the time frame when the state also gained a lot of the holdings of the power company. So I know that occurred.
Well, you know, the lake is a very unique lake as a fishery, too, because you got a wide range of different kinds of fish you can fish out there. And now, granted, I mean, I can find places, you know, all over the country here, not just in northern Wisconsin, but I can find places where you maybe have better, bigger walleyes and better fish, bigger muskies and everything else. But it's hard to find one lake that has everything in one place that this lake has. And as far as I'm concerned, it's probably one of the best panfish lakes in the state.
Yes, it's got a tremendous variety of all species of fish. Even within the muskies, which naturally I love to fish muskies, it's an action lake, but it's also a trophy lake. It's a unique blend as far as the muskie fishery goes. I mean, there's chances at record class fish in the flowage. There's 25, 35 pound muskies are, I don't want to use the word common, but they're more numerous than ever before in history. But yet there's also good numbers of fish out there where you can go out and even get lucky and catch three muskies in a day. So it's a great blend of both action and trophy waters. But in addition to the muskie fishing, like you mentioned, the panfish fishery is tremendous. The bluegill and crappie fishing is great. The crappie fishing isn't quite as good as it was back in the 40s, but by comparison to the surrounding lakes, it's still one of the best crappie lakes around in these days. Way back when the flowage was pretty raw and new, there was crappies out there that were 2.5, 3 pounds, even bigger than that. And we have pictures to show it, so I don't know what it was about that time frame, but there was giant crappies.
Well, you know, and I've talked about this before with the biologists and everything else on radio shows, that it just overall, we've got too good at catching them, and the fish just can't stay in the lake long enough to get that big anymore. So basically, we dropped the bag limit to 10 on the lake now, trying to get the panfish size coming up. And you know, a lot of things have changed over the years when it comes to walleyes, muskies, too. I mean, muskies, there's more muskies in there now, I think, because they increased the stocking level. And the walleye population almost faltered, but they started doing some things and brought that back now.
Yes, and the water level situation, that also has a great effect on both the muskie, the panfish, and the walleye fisheries. Years ago, the regulation of the water level, it was common to drop the water 9 to 13 feet every winter, which sounds like a lot, but actually it was really good for the flowage. And during that period, there was some added benefits that unfortunately we don't have today. When you have that water drop, you had the process of oxidation occur, whereas the bottom of the lake would be exposed to the air and elements, and that would oxidize the bottom, and that would release much more precious nutrients into the system that the newly hatched fry needed to eat when they first hatched. And that was all the little microscopic zooplankton that would be released into the system. So we did have more of the zooplankton feed to feed the small fish. And that's the only thing we're lacking, is we did have more smaller muskies in the flowage, great numbers of them, because we had such a great successful survival rate of newly hatched muskies and walleyes as well. We had great numbers of walleyes, so that's a little difference. Regarding the water drop, it kind of helped create the trophy crappie population because it kind of thinned the herd, so to speak, but you had greater size. You had less numbers of crappies, I think, but you had the big slabs. But that did negatively affect the bluegill population. So I think years ago, the bluegill fishing wasn't nearly as good. Fast forward it to today, now we have what we call a habitat drawdown, which is an 8 feet drawdown that we do on the flowage, usually alternate years. And that does give us many of these benefits of helping bring in more zooplankton into the system when there is water that low. And it does help control the milfoil as well. But because it's not an extreme drawdown, more than 8 feet, it set the stage for much better bluegill fishing. So our bluegill fishing is stellar. They're a ball. I love muskie fishing, but I'll tell you, my wife and I like to go out to catch big bluegills.
Well, folks, you know, we need to take yet another break and hear from even more of the fine sponsors that make this show possible every week. When we come back, we'll have even more from this week's guest. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after these messages. Hey folks, come on over to Hayward Ace Hardware and check out the area's largest selection of firearms, ammo, and accessories. We carry top brands like Browning and Sig Sauer, and we have a great selection of the newest and hard-to-find models. We've got a large selection of ammo with more coming in daily. If you need a scope, we carry great brands like Leupold, Hawk, and EOTech, and we'll even mount it and boresight it for you too. We even sell suppressors and silencers. And don't forget to check out our Guns of the Week. Huge discounts on a variety of pistols, rifles, and shotguns that change every week. So stop on in to Hayward Ace Hardware, your firearm superstore. Hayward Ace Hardware, Highway 63 North in Hayward, or give us a call at 715-634-8700.
This year, Dr. Ostrander and his staff at Hayward Animal Hospital will be celebrating 30 years. They thank you for your patronage. Hayward Animal Hospital continues to accept new clients and offers urgent care appointments daily. For same-day urgent care or emergency surgery, make sure you call early in the day as appointments fill rapidly. They open at 8 a.m. Hayward Animal Hospital is located 1 mile east of Hayward on Highway B. Call 715-634-8971.
If you'd like to have your time fishing be more enjoyable and productive, hiring a fishing guide can be a good investment. Whether it's learning more about fish patterns throughout the year, learning how to use your depth finder to find the best spots and fish, learn how to use that GPS to get the most out of it, or learn better boat control. A day on the water with a guide can really help you to be a better angler, as well as make a day on the lake very enjoyable. To book a guide trip this year or get more information, you can find us on the internet at www.wiscnorthlandoutdoors.com and then just click on Area Guides. Welcome back to the last segment of this week's Wisconsin Northland Outdoors. And folks, we're going to jump right back into that interview with this week's guest, John Detloff. Well, you know, in talking about that drawdown, it's a little different now with this habitat drawdown. I've had some people complaining about it. Actually, fishing guides, I'm not going to bring no names up, saying that, you know, they start way too early compared to what they used to.
Yes, I think they're trying to also think about the other life in the flowage, the herps, they call it, the turtles and things like that. And they figure that if they abruptly draw it down after freeze up in the winter, it might trap them in certain areas and maybe affect their numbers. And I'm not quite sure if that's necessary, but that's what they're doing right now with the habitat drawdown. As they start gradually drawing it down in October, they try to have it down about 5 feet by freeze up, which is mid-November, and then they drop it another 3 feet over the winter, reaching a maximum drawdown of 8 feet by March. So there is some inconvenience caused by the fall drawdown. You can still get on the lake and launch your boats, but it's inconvenient, but that's just what we have right now. Years ago, usually it didn't drop until after the lake froze. We still seem to have all the benefits from a drawdown, and I don't know, we still had plenty of turtles back then, so I don't really know.
Well, we don't have it's not a universal 8-foot drawdown across the lake, because there's places where the water doesn't go down that far.
Yeah, that's kind of the limit, like Crane Lake and Scott Lake, those two lakes will go down probably close to 7 feet. And Moonshine, the same thing.
I don't think Chief goes down as far either, does it?
I think Chief would go down at least that much. I'm not sure the depth of the water at the entrance to Chief. There might be 10 feet of water going into there, I'm not sure. But for the most part, with an 8-foot drawdown, all those lakes will drop with it. But if you go beyond that, no, you're right, those lakes become landlocked and they won't drop any additional amounts.
You know, like I said, a very interesting lake. And I know when it comes to the muskie fishing, didn't they actually double the amount of muskies they stocked when they do stock out there now? They had a limit on there on how many they could stock per lake, and I think they doubled that amount on the flowage or something.
Yeah, I've got to get updated on the numbers. I do believe they stock every third year. Yep. In the flowage. I think they're on a schedule of like 2019 and then 2022 and 2025. Yeah. So I think that's their schedule. The numbers, I'm not sure of.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure they increased it in the number of fish they were stocking. But it seems to be that there seems to be more muskies out there now, especially smaller ones. And I know the pike really affected that too, I think, when they got overloaded with pike, which were never in there. They just started getting in there when I first came here over 40 years ago.
Right. This is my 50th year in the flowage, and there was virtually no pike, northern pike, in the flowage at that time. One of our guests caught the first pike that I ever heard about caught on the flowage, and that was, boy, around 1978, I believe, and that was caught in the East Fork where it empties into the flowage. They used to fish for smallmouth down there, and, you know, right near the dam, and that seems to be where the northern pike came in, because they were catching them there for a few years and nowhere else in the flowage. So whether they were somehow stocked upriver, up the East Fork, on one of the small connecting lakes, I'm not sure, but I believe that that's where they first got in, is via the East Fork, and then all of a sudden they started spreading, and for a while they're only on the east side of the flowage. There was no northerns on the west side yet, but it only took a couple of years, and then all of a sudden they were showing up everywhere, and that's what we've got to deal with since. And that is one major factor that does affect the muskie population, is the northern pike, because they hatch sooner, and the newly hatched northern fry will eat the later hatching muskie fry, so they do negatively affect the muskie numbers, and they can coexist, but that's just part of the what happens.
Lots of great information talking about the 100-year celebration of the Chippewa flowage creation.
And, you know, next week we're going to finish up with that talk we had with John Detloff. We just didn't have enough time to run it in a half-hour show, so we'll finish up with the second part of that next week. You want to tune in and make sure that you catch that, because there'll be a lot of great information, including some historical stuff on the chip. Well, folks, you know, we're about out of time for this week's show. I'd like to remind everyone out there that if you miss a show, go to our website at wnoradio.com. And from there, you can link to our podcast site, and the show is also on Spotify and Google Podcasts every week. And also, if you're looking for information on vacationing and lodging here in the Hayward Lakes area, check out the Hayward Lakes Visitor and Convention Bureau website at haywardlakes.com. Thanks for listening, folks. We're out of time, and we'll be back again next week with another interesting show for you.
Listen with me, I'm going to take you there to our Wisconsin Outdoors, our Wisconsin Outdoors.
This program has been produced and hosted entirely by Wisconsin Northland Outdoor Communications. Any and all views expressed are not necessarily those of the station.